Hello and welcome to the Hidden History Podcast with me, Paul Christian. This first episode is going to be an amalgamation of my YouTube videos, so there may be references to some visual items there, which obviously you can't see because this is an audio format, so do check out my videos on YouTube, but forthcoming episodes will be more geared towards this platform. There's a link to my YouTube channel in the description of this podcast. So this video might be a little bit all over the place, but it's going to look at vampire mythology. Recently, I was lucky enough to witness a ritual dance which is meant to ward off vampires and werewolves whilst in Sofia in Bulgaria. Now, obviously, everyone knows the traditional methods of warding off a vampire, so it could be garlic or the crucifix, but you wouldn't think that dancing necessarily would keep them at bay. But that's exactly what these Kolodari dancers are doing in central Sofia. This dance is called the Koledovane. Ritual is also performed in neighbouring countries as well. And it's not actually Bulgaria's only association with vampires, because in 2012 this skeleton was found in the Black Sea port of Sozopol with a stake through its heart. The tradition obviously goes that a stake through a heart can stop the undead from rising. So vampire mythology is widespread throughout the world, from places such as Mesopotamia and ancient India to Hebrew traditions and ancient Greece with the Striges and the Lamia, but also in the predatory sirens, which some say lured sailors onto the rocks to feast on them. And there's a similar undead mermaid type creature which exists in Slavic mythology in the form of the Rusalka. In medieval times, vampire belief increased dramatically in southeastern Europe and particularly in the Habsburg territories, and approached mass hysteria at times. And there are also tales of revenants in England. The sort of cliched idea now that vampires could transform into bats and other creatures and sort of hang around in graveyards was a result of an amalgamation of various different parts of Eastern European folklore by people such as Bram Stoker and other authors. And of course this was demonstrated in Bram Stoker's most famous work, Dracula, who's named after Vlad Dracul, or Vlad the Impaler. And he and other authors also lent heavily on the antics of Elizabeth Bathory, the so-called Blood Countess, who was said to bathe in the blood of young girls to maintain her youthful looks. She was said to have begun her reign of terror behind this very door in Vienna. And the advent of film saw features such as Nosferatu, which was made in 1922. See Max Schreck as Count Orlok, which was effectively an unofficial adaptation of Dracula. And as well as the unofficial, there have been many renditions of Count Dracula himself, such as featuring Bela Lugosi as the character in 1931, shown here. Vampire legends have continued right up into the modern day and aren't just a thing of films and ancient history, as the Highgate vampire case showed. The London Evening News of the 2nd of November 1968 reported, on the night of Halloween 1968, a grave desecration by persons unknown occurred at Tottenham Park Cemetery in London. These persons arranged flowers taken from graves in circular patterns with arrows of blooms pointing to a new grave which was uncovered. A coffin was opened and the body inside disturbed. But their most macabre act was driving an iron stake in the form of a cross through the lid and into the breast of the corpse. The motive for the desecration was thought to be linked to the Highgate vampire case. A letter appeared in the Hampstead and Highgate Express on the 6th of February 1970, in which a David Farrant wrote that when passing the cemetery on the 24th of December the year before, he had glimpsed a grey figure which he considered to be supernatural and asked if others had seen anything similar. In scenes reminiscent of the medieval Habsburg hysteria of old, people said they'd seen a wide variety of ghosts and other spectral activity.
Thank you for watching. Please like, share and subscribe.
So, while many may be familiar with London's 202-foot-high monument to the Great Fire of London, they might not know the role it played in propaganda for religious purposes.
The monument commemorates the Great Fire of London, which started on the 2nd of September 1666. Its height is actually the same distance as it is from the bakery in Pudding Lane where the fire started. It's actually built on the site of the first church destroyed in the fire. The monument itself was designed by Robert Hooke and Christopher Wren, where the structure becomes a highly charged weapon in the religious propaganda war between Protestants and Catholics, lays in the inscriptions at the base of the monument.
The Great Fire took place in a highly charged religious and political environment, as it was just 61 years after the gunpowder plot which sought to kill James I. The plot was led by a Catholic militant called Robert Catesby and was rumbled early in the planning stage. But the writing was really on the wall for the plotters when Guy Fawkes was found in the undercroft of the Palace of Westminster, surrounded by barrels of gunpowder. This treason had, according to the rhyme, not been forgot in the late 1600s. Demonstrating this, one of the inscriptions on the base of the monument was added in 1681 on the orders of the Court of Aldermen, and it explicitly blamed Catholics for starting the Great Fire of London. The Latin inscription translated to "Burning of this Protestant city begun and carried on by the treachery and malice of the Popish faction." The libellous inscription raised the ire of one of England's greatest poets, Alexander Pope, himself a Catholic, who wrote, "Where London's column pointing at the skies, like a bully, lifts the head and lies." Sectarian strife existed throughout Europe in the 16th century as the Reformation raged, following the publication of Martin Luther's 95 Theses in 1517 and the Edict of Worms in 1521. The religiously motivated conflict ultimately led to the deaths of 8 million people in the 30 Years' War, which involved Protestant and Catholic German states in the Holy Roman Empire, but sucked in most of Europe's great powers between 1618 and 1648. And returning to the monument for a moment, the base also shows King Charles II providing relief after the fire and giving directions for restoring the city. By his side, his brother James, the Duke of York, can also be seen. The Duke would later become King James II, England's last Catholic monarch. The absolutist James was deposed in 1688 by his Protestant daughter Mary and her husband William of Orange in what became known as the Glorious Revolution. In later years, as religious conflict died down, the anti-Catholic inscription was removed in 1830 with Catholic emancipation. And that's it for this video. Please like, share and subscribe. Thanks for watching. So recently, newspaper reports have claimed that the Dyatlov Pass incident mystery has been solved. And for those not familiar with the mystery, it's the case of 9 Russian hikers who died in the northern Ural Mountains in February 1959 after heading for Orotan Mountain, which is known by local tribesmen as the Mountain of the Dead. They were led by Igor Dyatlov, who's pictured here, and were Russian students in the Soviet Union at the time. But all did not go well for the expedition, and they were found days later dead with horrific injuries and their bodies scattered over a wide area. The injuries were variable and bizarre and included a fractured skull, one person had missing eyes, and one had a tongue missing. There were a variety of theories for the deaths, including a Yeti attack, because a picture was found which showed a figure here, which appears to be like an abominable snowman. Also meteorological phenomena known as katabatic wind, the traditional alien abduction or alien attack theory, KGB death squads, and an avalanche or murder by native Mansi tribesmen whose markings were found on trees nearby. When they found the hikers' camp, Soviet investigators found that the tent was actually cut open from the inside. In recent years, Russian investigators have reopened the case and looked at the evidence again. And they've actually reached the conclusion that the hikers cut the tent open to escape from an avalanche and then ultimately died of hypothermia. But it's clear that an avalanche wouldn't account for those kind of injuries sustained by the victims, and families of some of them have rejected the conclusion. I'm actually in the process of writing a book on the theories associated with the Dyatlov Pass incident, and we'll examine them in further detail then. In the meantime, links to my other books are in the description below. And for now, thanks for watching. Please like, share and subscribe. And feel free to watch any of my other videos. So could these stones here in the walls of the remains of Hertford Castle be from Camelot, King Arthur's keep? That was the claim made by author Christopher Street, who wrote the book London's Camelot and the Secrets of the Grail, when I interviewed him a few years ago. So I was working for the local newspaper at the time, the now defunct East Hearts Herald, which covered a variety of areas, including Hertford. And Mr. Street told me the odd synchronicity is that remains of Camelot Manor or castle were removed to help build Hertford Castle. So there is a connection of sorts. The stones of Camelot may now be in Hertford. And a previous video of mine explored the links between Hertford and the Holy Grail, which obviously was associated with King Arthur and Camelot. And commenting on those links, he said, "The Grail, though, is an otherworldly thing, seen only in visions, therefore a personal experiential thing." So he seems to think that it's not actually a tangible item there. So he's not of the belief that the Holy Grail is in Hertford, or not in any material sense, at least. The main theory of Mr. Street's book is that he believes Camelot was indeed a real place and existed at the very centre of Enfield Chase. And he said today it is still there, hidden in woods on the fringe of North London and known as Camlet Moat. But obviously he claims that the stones that you can sort of see here and in Hertford Castle's walls were indeed brought from Camelot. So what do you think? Do you think these stones could have once been part of the walls of King Arthur's mythical Camelot? Thanks for watching. Please like, share and subscribe. So what you can see here is part of the ancient Roman fortification wall which surrounded the city of Verulamium, which is modern day St Albans. And this piece is called St Germain's Block, which is close to the London Gate, which featured in one of my previous videos. And this is located about a mile away from the Roman Theatre of Verulamium. Thank you for watching. Please like, share and subscribe. So this is a visit to Hitchin Lavender, which is an amazing lavender field in Hitchin in Hertfordshire. Hitchin's association with lavender is thought to go back as far as 1500. And during the Great Plague of 1665, there was much demand for it to use in nosegays because it was thought to ward against the plague. And the site in Hitchin has about 35 miles of lavender rows that you can walk through. So this video is going to take a look at one of the most striking parts of the City of London in the financial district, and that's Leadenhall Market. Built on the centre of what was Roman London, Leadenhall Market dates from the 14th century, with the name Leadenhall said to derive from Leather Hall. It was originally a meat, game and poultry market, but is now home to pubs, restaurants and high-end shops. The market's main attraction today is its highly decorated roof and cobbled floors, which were designed in 1881 by Sir Horace Jones, who also designed other famous markets such as Smithfield Meat Market and Billingsgate Fish Market, as well as Tower Bridge. The structure may be well known by people who have never been there or didn't even know where it was, because it was used in the Harry Potter films and the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, as well as other movies. In normal times, it's packed full of drinkers, shoppers, people going to restaurants, people just passing through and sort of perusing the place. But I managed to capture these images of a very deserted Leadenhall Market recently due to the coronavirus outbreak. It's interesting to contrast these modern day images from recently to this image in 1881, where it looks much busier. Hopefully it can return to its former glories very soon. Thank you for watching. Please like, share and subscribe. Also, please check in the description for links to my books, which explore some of the darker elements of London's history. So this is a recent visit to the picturesque Long Deans Nature Reserve in Hemel Hempstead in Hertfordshire, and also the adjacent Bunkers Park. So this area we're looking at here is Long Deans, which is an ancient flood pasture, has been so since the Iron Age, and is still actually used for cattle grazing now. It's sort of surrounded by woodland that you can see here on one side and a road on the other. And as the sign says here, this is Bunkers Park, which is over the road from Long Deans. This is an Iron Age farmstead, and was actually used continuously for farming from the Iron Age to 1997, when it was given over to the adjacent nature reserve and just sort of used as a park for local residents. You can see the landscaping here that is clearly sort of man-made. There's a mound there, and the fencing around the hedgerows, should I say, date to at least as far back as the medieval times, but probably further back. Walking back from Bunkers Park back to Long Deans here, this looks like the remains of an old well. Thank you for watching, and please remember to like, share and subscribe, and maybe check out some of my other videos. So this is St Mary the Virgin Church in Cheshunt in Hertfordshire. First recorded in Charter in 1146, completely rebuilt between 1418 and 1448, and had a three-stage tower topped with an octagonal turret on the top of it. Slightly newer parts as well, built the front of the church, which I think were built in the 1800s, a bit of modernisation. And that's that octagonal turret mentioned before there. On the side of the church is a whole host of these foliate heads or green man sort of gargoyles. There's one there, another one here, sort of all slightly different individual examples, but pretty good examples of them. And opposite the church, there is this very old coaching inn, the Green Dragon pub, which was used by Stuart monarchs as lodgings for a variety of visiting foreign dignitaries over the years. And thank you for watching. Please like, share and subscribe. So this is Verulam Park, or Verulamian Park, in St Albans, in Hertfordshire, which is home to this pretty impressive Roman gatehouse, which is the London Gate. So it's the outer part of the fortifications surrounding the walled city of Verulamium, which is in modern day St Albans. And here you can see a computer-generated image of what it would have looked like when it was fully constructed. This is part of the one of many Roman walls in St Albans, still standing today. And it's interesting to sort of notice the different layers and different building materials they use there. So there's some flint, and there are some bricks there as well, clearly visible. So this is a large piece of conglomerate Hertfordshire pudding stone in St Albans in Hertfordshire. It exists only in Hertfordshire, this type of conglomerate rock, known also as a hagstone, and it's been associated with fertility and warding off witches. Extremely rare. And I wrote about a theft of some of this stone in 2016 for the Daily Mirror. There you go, 54 million year old rock, revered for centuries as a fertility aid, and folklore states it's imbued with supernatural powers and can ward off witches. It's also associated with witches and fertility Wiccan practices and that sort of thing. Police officers were their PC Sean Lannan, Hertfordshire Police, commenting on the theft. But yeah, it's an interesting local legend, and stay tuned for more. Please like, subscribe, leave a comment, and click the bell for notifications. And yeah, There'll be some more folklore and mythology soon. I'll place a link to this article in the description below as well, so you can read about that theft and find out some more information. Thanks for watching. Bye. So this video is going to centre around a legend which I was partially involved in concerning the alleged location of the Holy Grail. So the story goes that the Knights Templar had a quite considerable presence in Hertford, in Hertfordshire, and had a series of subterranean tunnels underneath Hertford Castle and stretching throughout the town after the order fell out of favour in 1307. The Knights Templar had a particularly strong presence in the area and also in the other parts of Hertfordshire, such as Baldock, which was a sort of Templar stronghold and apparently was named after Baghdad. And they also built churches in other locations in London, such as famously the Temple Church, which is shown here. So as I mentioned before, the Templars fell out of favour early in 1307, with particularly Philip IV of France and Pope Clement V. And on Friday the 13th of October 1307, Philip IV of France ordered the arrest of the Templars, including the Grand Master Jacques de Molay. They were accused of various crimes, including worshipping idols, unholy sexual practices, spitting on the cross and denying Christ. And they were also accused of worshipping a bizarre horned deity called Baphomet. Grand Master Jacques de Molay himself was burned at the stake in March 1314 at the age of 70. Coming back to Hertford then, the Templars were apparently still continuing their practices in the town, using their tunnels and worshipping in various places in the town, but also in places nearby like the Royston Cave, which is a highly decorated man-made sort of cavern with a number of carvings which have been attributed to the Knights Templar by various experts over the years. And about 10 years ago, I myself became involved in the mystery as a reporter on the local newspaper, and I met a number of sources who claimed to be modern-day Knights Templar who were sort of carrying on the town's legacy and involvement with the order. One source even claimed the Holy Grail was buried beneath this shop in central Hertford, which is a now a defunct Monsoon sort of women's accessories shop. And allegedly the Grail is buried beneath it. What do you think? Do you think the Holy Grail could be buried here? Thanks very much for watching, and please like, share and subscribe. Thanks to everyone for listening. Please share and subscribe.